Mundus podcast.
Who are we horror?
Oh, crikey. I think Brain of Morbius is a good place to start, because it seems like the most overtly Hammer of them. It's basically Frankenstein. It's a lightning-struck gothic castle on an alien planet, being made up of bits of other people that have crashed. Sarah Jane goes blind at one point. It's cracking stuff. And also, vague bone of contention with regard to canon, because there's the, I can't remember whether it's called mind wrestling, but I'm going to call it mind wrestling. There's the mind wrestling sequence where you go back and see supposedly various different regenerations of the Doctor and of Morbius. One of them is Philip Hinchcliffe. Huh. But loads of kind of, yeah, you see lots and lots of different versions, supposedly lots of different versions of the Doctor. Some of them where they didn't have a photograph, they're just a drawing. So I would assume at one point the Doctor regenerated into a drawing. several points. I think he was a judge or something like that. And then there's a couple that are photographs. One of them is Philip Hinchcliffe. But yeah, they're supposedly like past incarnations of both the Doctor and Morbius.
There is always an element of humour within Doctor Who, but it was actually quite creepy, Morbius, you know,
yeah.
Quite weird and quite unsettling. Because when you've got that sort of weird, isolated house and a mental bloke running around, you know,
yeah,
it's you know, with a mental bloke with an operating table, you're in bother, aren't you?
Yeah. It's classic Tea Time stuff, that. But it kind of is. It kind of is as well, and it's I think from an era when, like, the gloves were slightly offered, like, quote-unquote children's entertainment in a lot of ways. Horror seems to have been a lot more a richer part of kids' entertainment. It seemed to have got sanitised a little bit later on. But, like, Bob Holmes and Philip Hinchcliffe in their Let's Scare the Little Buggers remit from the mid-70s.
And another one around that was obviously Pyramids of Mars, and it is a classic Doctor Who premise. You've got the kind of the isolated country house. You've got Sutek. I mean, Christ,
yeah.
that's unsettling. He kind of is like a precursor to Darth Vader in a sense, because he's just dressed in black and there's loads of steam everywhere wherever he goes.
He's got the temperature right up. His sinuses get blocked.
He's permanently got a cold.
Allergies.
That was very scary. And then you've obviously got another thing, not sort of thing you'd see every day, but if you went to, say, the British Museum, you'd see mummies, and you'd be like, oh, mummies, and then suddenly they're coming at you. Jesus.
Yeah. And it's kind of what the show does really well, is it takes a kind of an idea or a trope or something like that, and it twists it to its own ends. So it's like a lot of my favourite Doctor Who stories have been where something appears. It's the classic thing of it. It's big old science that looks like magic kind of thing. Weirdly, actually, kind of tying into another episode, pair of episodes that we don't have on the list, The Impossible Planet and the other one that's in that one. Was it a two-parter with the devil in it?
It was, yes. It was actually supposed to be Sutek in it initially. That was the rumour, but it was actually just the bloke who voiced Sutek.
Yeah, Gabriel Wolf. It was amazing.
I'm trying to think what it was called now. But yeah, that was brilliant. And it was... that sort of isolated thing again, where no one else can help you, so you're fucked, basically.
Yeah, on the edge of a black hole with the devil. that's all my nightmares as a kid rolled into one.
And Michelle Collins as well, that was in your nightmare as well.
Oh, for God's sake, yeah.
Was it Michelle Collins? Was she?
No, that's 42.
Oh, I was getting mixed up in my head.
But again, it's vaguely horror-ish. It's like an intelligent son possesses people.
Obviously.
that's what happens. Yeah. An intelligent star, an intelligent son. Anybody can have a male child that's bright. That's not necessarily remarkable. But a star, now, that is
weird. The Impossible Planet, you've got people covered all in writing as well, and that was scary.
Yeah, actually, I don't know why I didn't put that on the list. This is the thing about this, like this topic, is that you'll make the list and then you remember about 15 others that are just kind of scary. It's just the show just handles that sort of thing just kind of so well. Like it's like dark enough to be a little bit, you know, woo, bit way.
Don't get me wrong. There are times when it's not in any way horror-y at all. You know, I mean, I was listening to a podcast recently, and they were talking about Castrovalva and stuff, and about the mass element.
Yeah.
And then he went American. They hate the math. No, the mathematical sort of element of Bidmead and stuff like that. And that was very far removed from horror.
And is it Kinder? That's Buddhist. Yes. It's kind of Buddhist philosophy.
That's a bit weird.
Yeah. There you go. This is the classic thing. So it's the flexible format. It's got room for all sorts of kind of different ideas and kinds of storytelling and that. But I personally like the scary ones best. But that might just be because I like horror, and horrific things.
Another one, obviously a period piece again. Talents of Wing Chun.
Yeah, one of my favourites. It's not like, I don't think it's a very difficult leap to make that one, but it's absolutely one of my favorite stories of the whole run, and actually looks like they had a few quid for once. So I mean, other than the giant rat, it's all pretty good, pretty well done, and pretty engaging.
What was the little guy called again?
Oh, Mr. Sin.
Yeah, because he, I think we had this discussion about 2 years ago when we were doing the podcast. I was saying he reminded me of this little puppety type thing out of Dead of Night, the British film from the
40s. Yes, yeah,
but just a little kind of thing. I'm going to have to edit this over. A little lad with a knife. You can't say that, do you?
No, you keep that in. You're going to keep that in. That's staying. Let's do a director's cut for me anyway with that in.
Yeah, so there's this little midget lad with a knife.
Yeah.
That's scary, you know, and it's like, and you've got that sort of, that, again, the thing like Gatiss, people keep using this phrase at the moment, trope, you know, it's Steve Moffat's trope.
Yeah.
I'd never heard this phrase before, like, probably about a year ago.
Yeah, it's trope everywhere.
Yeah, Gatiss's trope is this sort of Victoriana thing, and he loves that, and I think that's what Talents of Wingshine really does well.
Yeah, I agree. I like the Victorian stuff. Generally, it's because like waistcoats and sideburns, I think. But it's something that the BBC could also do well, because obviously it's simpler, it's easier to realistically portray an era of history that actually happened than it is to imagine an era of history that hasn't yet happened and probably won't. So just realistically, they can do it a lot better. And it's the, you know, BBC doing costume dramas, it's like, you know, they're world renowned for that stuff. So yeah.
And the fog always helps, you know, when you've got some sort of like weird peril, and it's all foggy and misty, and you know,
the London pea soup, Tom Baker swanning about like Sherlock Holmes.
Indeed.
Yeah.
And that links to the next one, actually, Horror Fang Rock.
Yes.
Which is another one, which is a period piece, but also is very misty and
very foggy and nightbound, and kind of like, it's like it kind of take, actually that one, them being on a lighthouse, it does kind of make it the best of the fact that these are all studio bound productions. They didn't really do any filming outside or anything, so there's no OB, so you don't get that leap between film and video, which can kind of sometimes take you out of it. But like, yeah, they're basically all just trapped in a big column of stone with a thing made out of popping paper in the end. But the build up to the thing made out of popping paper is pretty sweet, I reckon. And the lighthouse keeper, when he's kind of possessed by said piece of popping paper, that kind of waxy face, that waxy pallor and that kind of grin as well. He's amazing. It's a really good performance.
Doctor Who's brilliant when it's claustrophobic.
Yeah.
And a small cast as well.
Yeah.
It's, you know, it's, and I think that's why it does well.
Kind of like a little, it's almost theatrical.
So I really like that. The first time I ever saw that, I'd only read it as a novel, and then I think you create certain things in your head as well. But I did enjoy it. I thought it was good, and I think it again ties in with this sort of brilliant sort of anything goes horror element that we had at that time.
Which
sadly kind of was lost because it was deemed too scruffy.
But I mean, like, that's the nature of it. New people come in and new sets of ideas, put together. That's really bad. New ideas change, people change, and that sort of thing. And it's been nice actually that, like, there's after 2005, there has been Russell the Davies. Still seems to quite like scary ones because you got Tooth and Claw. He let Moffat play about with the nation's heads, and so it's kind of good that in some ways, like, it's been accused of being quite soap opera-y, but still there's the kind of the darkness and the kind of horror aspects are still there, in, you know, as strong as you could get away with now.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, all Moffat stuff, really, like, especially when he was doing like the one-off sort of stuff, like the Silence of the Library and stuff, they've all got massive horror elements to them.
Yeah, actually, weirdly, Silence of the Library is like the most overtly Scooby-Doo because, you know, a skull in a spacesuit. That's a Scooby-Doo as hell.
Yeah, when was Fendal then? Image of Fendal. Was that just after that sort of time?
That was after Hinchcliffe. I can't remember his name. I'm going to say Graham Williams. It was the last of the kind of horror ones. I think it was a late period Leela episode.
Right.
And it's brilliant because it's got Pentangle in it. It's got Don Brennan from Corrie. It's got a kind of Lovecraftian beastie that is made out of papier-mâché and a hairdryer. It's got Cassandra's dad from Fools and Horses playing a Swiss tyrant. And it's pretty sort of bonkers. It seems like the last hurrah for the kind of that Hammer era of Who. But it's just a lot of fun. Oh, and there's this brilliant old wise woman who knows all about magic and bits and pieces. And this is kind of the great thing. It's like sort of the notion that bits and pieces of what has filtered through to humans as magic is actually some kind of weird alien science thing, because they do stuff like salt, which is commonly used in magical and occult things, is a substance that will repel the beastie, possibly because it looks a bit like a slug. But, you know, salt v slug equals mess in your garden, but other bits and pieces like that. So Benedict Cumberbatch's mum's in it.
I think I've only seen Fendal the once.
Yeah,
and it hasn't really. I remember the images of it. It stuck in my head, but I can't really remember that much about it. But what's her name?
Venton. Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Oh, and also it's got this absolutely bonkers Dudley Simpson organ score. Like in a big old church organ. So it's just like, it's proper, it's synths and you've got organs, it's proper mad. It's really good.
One that's just come out in my head there as well, in terms of Baker, was Katie Time was Stones of Blood.
Yeah.
That was pretty hammery sort of horror-y elements to it, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. And also had a really good, what was her name? The archaeologist woman. She was great.
There's been subtext, wasn't there?
Yeah. I think that's true throughout the whole show.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's only they're a bit being overt with it now. Yeah. It's just been bubbling under for 50 years.
And another one you put down as well was State of Decay as well.
Yeah, Vampires. Mm. That was Romana 2, Fourth Doctor. And yeah, Vampires. I think it's a Terence Dick script. I think it was going to be done earlier. But basically the notion is it's three people that crashed in a spaceship, and there's like there's this thing called the Great Vampire that lives under. I haven't seen it for a long time. All I remember is like, it's basically there's the woman who looks a bit like Susie Sue. There's a guy who looks like Mark Heap, and there's another guy who looks like Mark Gatiss, and they're all vampires.
Is it the part of the E-Space trilogy?
It is indeed. Yeah, sorry, yeah, yes, it is. Yeah. Bloody Adrix, I know I blocked somebody out. So Adrix involved. I haven't seen it for a long time. I'll put it down on the list. I've got the DVDs before we did this, but yeah, I remember really liking it. In a way that I hadn't really enjoyed a lot of the E-Space trilogy. It's just kind of like, the last one, Warriors Gate, got quite sort of self-reflexive, and it was kind of cool, but it didn't really sort of spark me. But I enjoyed State of Decay, but possibly because I must have been like a big goth.
Another one in the classic series, which is a particular favourite of mine, is Fenric. Fenric, and I love Fenric.
Yeah,
brilliant.
It's that end of the Seventh Doctor's tenure where like things are actually the stories are getting better. Pivot episode for Ace, really, because she kind of grew into a young lady rather than a young girl. And also, Nicholas Parsons was brilliant in it. It was a phrase I thought I'd never utter. But he was really good in it. I enjoyed his turn as a vicar. But also vampires, big kind of blue, bulbous vampire-type people.
It's what Doctor Who does best. It's ripping off shows, but being very overt about it. It's we're like the fog.
Yeah,
you know, that's not a problem. You know, we're Night of the Living Dead. We love it.
Yeah, like his Dark Materials. Let's basically have that as Doomsday. Yeah, let's do that.
And that was brilliant. And there were so many kind of things where they're riffing off certain moments. But if you're in the know, you'll like it. If you're not in the know, you'll just think, oh, I'm really enjoying this anyway.
Yeah, that's when references are done really well. It's there as a cheeky nod to anybody that would know, but it's not going to necessarily alienate anybody who doesn't know.
In terms of New Who, just blasting through.
Yeah.
Tooth and Claw was another one on the list.
Yeah, I like that. I like werewolves, and I had a really good cast as well. Derek Riddell from a bunch of stuff. He was really good. Kung Fu Monks, that's always fun. The beginnings of Torchwood.
Indeed, yes.
The historical precedent of Torchwood.
Because we had that kind of arc where it was kind of like, Torchwood. What did you say, Torchwood?
Yeah, was this crisp Torchwood flavoured crisps? What does that mean? Yeah.
And then years later, they go to America and everyone goes, oh no.
Oh no, it's a big geological vagina.
That should have been the DVD from cover.
a big rock vagina.
I always felt I was a little bit taken out of the action by the actual werewolf itself.
Yeah, I suppose this is where it's a kind of CG can be bad in that respect, because I was watching The Amazing Spider-Man the other night, which overall really loved. But again, like the first Spider-Man with Peter Parker, Tobey Maguire. They've all got Peter Parker in. But it's kind of where he's a bit weightless and kind of flinging around. There are a couple of bits where he looked weightless. CG can do that if the physics isn't quite right. And sometimes I think that, like, they get the textures right. The look of the creature is great, because I'm a big fan of bipedal werewolves. So I love dog soldiers and that, and howling. But sometimes the physics of its movement isn't quite right. There's something about it that just looks a bit weightless and doesn't really kind of ring true. And it was a little bit like that with that werewolf.
It was fun. It was a fun
episode. Oh, yeah.
A good period piece.
Yeah.
People enjoy that,
But I was really hoping that was going to be the point that David Tennant would be allowed to use his natural Scottish accent. I was rather hoping Tennant would be Scottish.
Yeah, you would hope that you just kind of just drop into it, you know.
Yeah, and it's I've properly regenerated now, I'm Scottish. Yeah.
Wow, imagine that, if he'd actually done that, bloody hell.
That would have been amazing, yeah.
I personally think this next one, it still is the best kind of horror episode that's been done, apart from, say, Blink, it would be Unquiet Dead.
Yeah, that's... Yeah. And again, it's a Mark Gatiss, he keeps cropping up in these ones. Welsh Gas Zombies, fantastic.
You know, he did Idiot's Lantern. I think a year later.
Yeah.
And that was all right, but I think he got everything right with the Unquiet Dead. We had Gwen in from Torchwood.
Yeah, free Gwen.
Yeah, free Gwen.
And, it was the Doctor geeking out over meeting Charles Dickens, played by Simon Callow. Fine performance. Welsh Gas Zombies. And the first instance of the Rift as well. That's all kind of tying up together to end up with... John Barrowman standing on buildings
And I think it was the first time as well, in obviously the first time in the show where we'd actually had, this is what it's going to be like. It's going to be, we're going to have a bit of scary stuff as well, because up to that point we'd had Rose and End of the World. So
yeah,
it was like, we can do kind of scary period pieces, and we are like the whole show.
Yeah, this is, I mean, I remember the reviews at the time basically saying that this, yeah, this episode was very much kind of harking back to that Hinchcliffe era, kind of the old, the scarier Tom Baker years. So the where the new show kind of felt the most like the old show, and yeah, that's true.
On this list as well, totally going out of kilter in terms of chronological stuff, but yeah, the Chase as well, you put the Chase,
yeah,
on.
It's a bit of a weird one. I mean, it's William Hartnell. There was one episode of the Chase where they end up in a castle with a Dracula and a Frankenstein, except they're not a Dracula, yeah, and a Frankenstein, they're robots in that typical, there's an embryonic version of the, oh, actually it turns out it's science kind of thing that's in Who. It looks like it's a scary monster, actually it's science. But yeah, I haven't seen it in a long time. I loved a bit with the Beatles in, but yeah,
it was a bit mental. I got on video,
yeah,
and I've seen it a couple of times. Yeah, I enjoyed it, but it's in the same part of your brain as the Mind Robber, something that I haven't seen for a bit.
Yeah.
And that's mental. I loved it.
I need to go back. I really need to go back and see the Mind Robber again, because that's proper head bending stuff. It's really good. But yeah, the Chase is a lot of fun. But yeah, it's probably arguably the first time that we see like an explicitly horror thing happening in Who.
If we think about a lot of modern Who now, I think there's always, as we said, a sprinkling of horror in it. You know, obviously Blink, I think everyone's talked to death about how great Blink is. I think it's a given, you know.
Yeah.
But we haven't even mentioned kind of like when the Weeping Angels have come back, you know, the time of, yeah, the angels and stuff.
They've lost. I mean, Blink was really the first kind of horror one. I like the comparison that was made between Alien and Aliens and Blink and the subsequent ones with the Weeping Angels in. Once you've got hundreds of them and it's not a solitary or a couple of them stalking around an old house, you do lose a bit of that horror vibe and you go back to a bit more of a James Cameron 80s sci-fi thing, which is cool, but it's not kind of quite the same. So I think like, I'm kind of hoping we don't see the Weeping Angels again for a long time, because I think like the more that you see of them, the less mystery there is and kind of the just less interesting they are. In Blink, I would really have been, to be honest, quite happy if they just left it there. Although I did like some of the wibbly wobbly stuff they did with Flesh and Stone and that with regard to 11 popping back in his own timeline to go and talk to Pond. Which is really clever. There's nothing really to do with the Weeping Angels, but yeah, you've kind of seen a lot of them now. You kind of, once you start figuring out how they work, it loses some of the mystery.
I think, and to sum up, I think Doctor Who has always got a horror element running through it now, especially with Moffat, who's a massive horror fan.
Yeah,
run the show. I was just thinking, even kind of Day of the Moon and stuff like that, that's pretty horror as well.
Yeah,
it's quite scary sort of elements to it. I think scaring people, kids, family, whatever, is what Doctor Who should do.
Absolutely. If you're little and you kind of get to experience fear with people that you trust nearby, and you know, you get a wee hug, I guess, and it's a good way of kind of learning to deal with those sort of things. So I think ultimately it's quite healthy, but also I say that because I'm a grown man and I like horror, so of course I want more of it. So of course I'm going to cut psychological reason to justify it. But yeah, I think it absolutely is something that the show does brilliantly. And long may it continue.
And that's a perfect way to end it.
Oh, pro.
It was pro. And now we go to promotion corner.
Okay, then.
So what do you have to haul?
I'm gonna haul our current mutual project. Well, actually, there's two things I'm going to haul. The Bearcast is still going on. That's www.bearcast.co.uk. That's some bears talking jolly comedy. And yourself's on there as well.
Hey.
And I'm 1571, which is just a glimpse into the world's weirdest set of voicemails, which you are also on, which you can find at all letters and all one word, 1571.tumblr.com, or have a dig about on iTunes or something like that. They're only 6 minutes. It's not going to take you a lot of time. I'm quite proud of what we've done with it, actually.
it does sound good, and it doesn't outstay its welcome. It's bum bum, and you're like, oh, one more.
Yeah, it's
good.
It's basically, but there's only two at the moment. There's a third on the way, and I'm not going to say anything more about the sneaky one. So we're going to do a series of six. So we've got like another four at least coming. Please listen, or I may cry.
No other kind of other website-y stuff?
Oh, yeah, there's my blog thing. It's the DannyDavies.co.uk. That's sporadically updated. Oh, to be honest, I'm usually on Twitter. It's at DannyDavies. Mundus podcast. 3.